If the court please, David Kofod, my registration number is 3807. I'm the attorney for the appellant in this case. I was also the attorney for the plaintiff in the trial court. Your Honor, if the court please, I've noticed that opposing counsel has chosen to put up two posters. I would ask the court to consider that these posters are not, but in my mind, are an improper attempt to influence a court over something that, number one, we contend is not relevant, number two, it's not accurate, and number three, it's certainly not undisputed. And yet that's what those things would imply, that this is an undisputed poster.
Mr. Kofod, they were admitted at trial, were they not?
Pardon me?
They were admitted at trial
They were admitted as such, but counsel has put this document, a reduced portion of this poster, in the record as Exhibit A. So that is already in the record for review. So this, to me...
Counsel, is that my understanding that the motion to add this to the record was unopposed by you? Is that not correct?
Pardon me?
It's my understanding that the motion that was filed to add this document to the record was unopposed by you. Is that correct?
That's correct.
You seem to be opposing it now?
No, I'm not opposing to it because it was admitted. I stipulated to them, here's what happened, Judge, as far as to clarify. This particular exhibit, the reason this was not included in the original record was because defendant's counsel had taken that exhibit after the trial and he'd taken it from the court. When the appeal was initiated, he did not return it to Adams County. So as a result, it was not included in the original record. Now, I believe that this was because they did not consider it relevant, and believe me, I did not consider it relevant. But in fact, he did finally, 2 weeks ago, I believe about 2 weeks ago, in fact, trial counsel produce this poster, and he made a small copy of it and introduced it with my acceptance as part of the record. And so that is what happened as far as this document is concerned.
Mr. Kofod, let's short circuit this. We'll allow him to do it. We understand your argument. I assure you will not unduly influence this court.
I appreciate your honor. And if I may reserve 4 minutes, please. In talking about that, I would like to discuss a little bit this document because of its new entrance into this case. This document was a poster that was created by defense counsel in the trial court. It was a poster, a self-serving poster, that purported to state what was undisputed facts. This poster then was presented during the trial court, and as many of the things it stated was, this was undisputed by Dr. Adams. It was intended to state what Dr. Adams had said was undisputed. The only problem with this is that virtually every one of these issues that they say is undisputed was in fact disputed in the trial. And those references to the undisputed nature of this poster are contained in my briefs, specifically at page 30 to 36 of the opening brief and page 8 to 9 of the reply brief, which specifies precisely the disputed nature of the relevant portions of this poster. I believe that all of the relevant things on that poster were, in fact, disputed very clearly by Dr. Adams. And yet, this poster was taken in to evidence by the trial court, but a review of the actual testimony of Dr. Adams will, I think, clearly show that these things were totally disputed. Your Honor, in this case, basically, my argument is based on three parts. The first part being that Dr. Adams testified over 10 times about his opinion that defendant cut the bottle, which caused an enterotomy during the first surgery. Dr. Adams testified that once you cut the bowel and create the enterotomy, the bowel becomes contaminated, and you never, never place a foreign object in the presence of contaminated wounds. Instead, if that occurs, you quickly close up the hole, put in antibiotics, and stop the procedure. If you place a foreign body, in this case the synthetic mesh, the foreign body is going to be what is called a nidus for infection. That nidus, the mesh, is going to get infected. Dr. Adams explained that once you create an enterotomy, the area immediately becomes contaminated. And when you put the mesh over a contaminated wound, the mesh is going to be like a nest to hold and nurture the infection. He described it as what we call a trail of tears, because you never really eradicate the infection. So you never put a synthetic mesh in there. He stated.
Well, Mr. Kofod, can I ask you a question? The issue in this case seems to be whether Dr. Adams testified to anything that the defendant did wrong besides the placement of the mesh.
The central part of this is the placement of the mesh in a contaminated area. That's a central part of the case.
But the placement of the mesh did not cause the second enterotomy, did it?
The placement of the mesh caused the initial infection, and that is what Adams has repeated, I counted 10 times in the course of his testimony, and I'd be happy to provide those pages where he has explained that.
But it seems to me that what this comes down to is, what was the cause of the plaintiff's condition, the second enterotomy or the first enterotomy?
Oh, first of all, there was not a second enterotomy.
I thought there was evidence
It was a partial enterotomy.
I'm sorry.
Partial. The difference, and I think your honors have probably perceived this, the difference is that an enterotomy is only called an enterotomy if it perforates the entire thickness, and that's called a full thickness enterotomy. One that's only a partial is called an otomy, and that is not an enterotomy in and of itself.
But counsel, didn't the second partial thickness injury become a full thickness injury sometime after the first surgery, if not during the first surgery?
So there was
a second enterotomy.
Yeah, and there was a second partial enterotomy. It was really not even an enterotomy. It was, in fact, a partial.
But didn't it ultimately become a full thickness?
It ultimately did after they got done doing
it. Didn't that second enterotomy cause the need for the second surgery?
The second enterotomy, according to Dr. Adams, did not cause any of the problems. Problems were caused by the complications that followed by putting a mesh in part of the contaminated area. As soon as a hole is made by the enterotomy, that area becomes contaminated by nature. And when it becomes contaminated, and then you put a mesh in there, that's the breeding ground for the mesh. It's the nidus, the nest. And once that happens, it's all over, essentially. It's what Dr. Adams has said. That led to everything. So all the complications, you know, everything thereafter followed the thing you never do, and that's put a synthetic mesh over the top of an enterotomy opening.
Didn't Dr. Adams testify that the placement of the mesh had nothing to do with the second surgery?
The mesh had to do with the fact that it was placed not only over the enterotomy, but also right next to the abdominal wall. And that's what caused the infection to get into the abdominal wall. The mesh bred it. It was a nesting place. And that's what Dr. Adams has testified to, that's what got into the abdominal wall And that's what caused all these problems.
But didn't Dr. Adams testify that the second surgery would have been necessary even if there had been no mesh placed during the first surgery?
If there had been no mesh put placed in there, and instead, what he said, if you open the wound, if you do an enterotomy, at that time, you stop. You don't proceed further. You, in fact, go in and you sew it up, put in antibiotics, treat it, come back another day after it's healed. But if you're going to proceed with putting in the mesh, then you're immediately asking for exactly what happened. And that's what he had testified to on 10 different places in his testimony. And I can give those page numbers to you if you like, but I'm sure you have those. Those page numbers.
We have those from your brief, counsel.
Okay, thank you.
You're at 4 minutes now, so I'll just...
Oh, I'm sorry. Geez.
Time flies.
Let me limit that too, can I?
Sure, okay. Of course.
I just want to cover the next thing. The next thing is, my part of the argument, is the entry of the hospital record itself. And that hospital record is relevant, and Dr. Adams said it was very relevant, because that hospital record specifically was put in by the hospital staff. And that record said, referred to as, this is regarding the cause of what happened. The record itself, it said, an accidental laceration and infection and inflammation reaction due to introduction of a prosthetic device. This was the mesh, prosthetic device. So that was actually stated, not by Dr. Adams, but by the staff of the hospital. The third argument is the actual admission of the defendant. And this was admitted to the entire family. After the last surgery, Mrs. Lloyd came to the waiting room. Mrs. Lloyd and her kids were there, and she said, what in the world happened to cause all this? And that's when he admitted it was because he had cut the bowel. And that was the first that she knew, really, that had even happened.
But didn't Dr. Adams testify that causing the enterotomy is not a breach of the standard of care?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Did Dr. Adams testify that causing the breach or causing the enterotomy was not a breach of the standard of care?
Yes. Even the judge noted that the testimony of Dr. Adams indicated that it was a breach of standard of care.
I'm sorry, the word was not a breach of standard of care.
The what?
As I understand Judge Navarro's question, didn't he testify that it was not a breach of the standard of care to have nicked the bowel?
Oh, not to nick the bowel, no. I'm sorry, I misunderstood you. No one has ever claimed nicking the bowel itself. That can happen. It can happen. It happens to a lot of.
Does it happen in the absence of negligence?
It can happen in the absence of negligence, certainly.
So, therefore, what is the relevance of the defendant's admission on that point?
Yeah, that is. Well, that was the major point. We all pretty much conceded that enterotomy itself was not, that itself is not negligence, but it started the process. That's what started it. It opened up, made it contaminated. And then what kicked it off was placing the foreign object on top of it. And as Dr. Adams testified, he said, this is a simple matter. He said, this is just a matter of principle of general surgery. You do not put a foreign object over the top of an enterotomy that is already contaminated. And he specifically disputed those things that they have on this poster that say it's undisputed. I guess my minutes are probably dwindling here.
Yes. Thank you.
May it please the court and counsel, I'm Ron Nimero of Kennedy Childs. My number is 15178.
If you're looking for the up and down arrows, they're on the front of the podium underneath.
Oh, I see.
There you go.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. This is, that works well. I'm number 15178, the firm of Kennedy Childs, here on behalf of the appellee, Dr. Alan Rosenberger. And Judge Navarro, you hit the nail on the head with the question about whether Dr. Adams testified that the second surgery would be necessary regardless of the placement of the mesh. And that is his testimony. And he testified to that, and I'll get back to that. But that being his testimony proves, I think, that the trial court was absolutely right to direct a verdict in favor of Dr. Rosenberger at the end of plaintiff's evidence. Because that shows that plaintiffs could not meet the but-for requirement of causation in a medical malpractice case. Because if, regardless of the mesh, the second surgery would be necessary, then regardless of the alleged negligence, the damages would have occurred. And that's the issue in this case.
Counsel, I just have a real quick question that I was having difficulty understanding. What is the difference between a partial thickness and a full thickness? Does that mean whether you've, I suppose, that just nicking the bowel, you actually cut through and into the bowel, whether you cut all the way or not all the way? I didn't understand what that was
well,
about.
Dr. Adams compared it to a garden hose. And a partial thickness injury, not technically an enterotomy, but a partial thickness injury would be like a nick in a garden hose that doesn't quite go all the way through the hose. But then under pressure, and in this case, the pressure was the ileus, the lack of functioning of the bowel, under pressure, that nick can grow, can become a hole, which is what happened. And then the hole...
So it goes all the way to the inside of the hose?
Yeah. It goes halfway through the hose.
I have
and then under
okay.
pressure,
I get
it inverts.
You don't need to spend any more time on it. I just want to make sure I understood it.
And that's the mechanics of it. And Dr. Adams and Dr. Rowland, both the experts that plaintiffs endorsed, both testified, as Judge Casebolt pointed out, that enterotomies can occur and partial thickness injuries can occur to the bowel in a hernia repair operation, absent negligence. In fact, both testified that the very same things that happened to them when they had performed hernia repairs in patients in the course of their
Mr. Nimmer, let me posit something to you because, and I'm not sure that this is the theory, but I think this is the plaintiff's theory, that the second surgery may not have been necessitated by the partial nicking of the bowel in the first surgery, but that the infection that was created after the first surgery by placement of this mesh made worse the conditions that were found on the second surgery and then necessitated all of the subsequent care that the plaintiff has had to undergo.
I don't think there's any support in the record in Dr. Adams' testimony for that.
Well, as I understand it, he said the mesh was wrongly placed.
Correct.
And that was the focus of infection that allowed the infection to really get going.
Right.
Okay, so...
But no, at that point, he did not say that.
He did not.
He said the mesh was in place. And then both Dr. Rowland and Dr. Adams testified that when an infection occurs from mesh, it takes weeks, months, or years to manifest itself.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just want to make sure I understand your answer on that particular point. Didn't Dr. Adams say that the infection from the mesh could take months, could take weeks, months, or years, not that it necessarily would take a week or a month or years?
My recollection is that they do take weeks, months, or years. I don't think he testified that they could be instantaneous or even within the course of a few days.
I thought he said if it could happen within the first week, in which case it would be called an acute infection.
Right, but I think that if it's acute, he differentiated between acute and chronic acute. And I think the distinction...
Right, he said chronic acute was after the first week, and within the first week would be acute. At least that's how what his testimony reads to me.
That may be. But I think the testimony, Dr. Adams' testimony, was also that the infection was started by the partial thickness injury, the second enterotomy. That infection is what caused the enterocutaneous fistula. And the enterocutaneous fistula is what necessitated all the subsequent surgeries.
So following up on that, is it your view that Dr. Adams never testified that there was an infection in place before the second enterotomy?
He was very, you have to read that testimony, you have to parse it very closely. He testified that there was infection. He was never quite clear about the source of the infection, but he was quite clear that what caused the enterocutaneous fistula was the second enterotomy, and that the enterocutaneous fistula was what necessitated all the subsequent surgeries.
Well, didn't he say in his direct examination that all of the additional surgeries were required because a synthetic mesh was placed in the presence of the wound?
He did say that. That's correct. But that testimony has to be placed in context of the various concessions he made in the cross-examination. And that's why it's so important to keep in mind that the testimony that you pointed out, that the surgery would have been required regardless of the mesh. Because that testimony of Dr. Adams can't be squared with what he said on direct.
Well, what if we assume for the purposes of the argument that the second surgery was entirely caused by the second enterotomy and not by the mesh?
Could you repeat?
Sorry. Assume for the moment that the second surgery was caused entirely by the second enterotomy, not by the placement of the mesh. What about the subsequent surgeries, the third, fourth, fifth, sixth surgeries? How do we know those weren't caused in part by the infection related to the first surgery and the synthetic mesh placed there?
Well, I think there are a couple of ways of answering that. One is that the plaintiff has the burden of putting on that evidence, and there was no testimony suggesting that the subsequent surgeries were caused by, had a different etiology than the second surgery. In fact, as I recall Dr. Rowland's testimony, and Dr. Rowland wasn't endorsed to testify to causation and didn't testify to causation. He only testified to the surgeries that he performed. The only expert who testified to causation was Dr. Adams, and Dr. Adams' testimony was regarding the subsequent surgeries, that those were caused by the second enterotomy, as I recall.
I thought he said they were caused by the January surgeries, sort of broadly.
I just happened to have brought his testimony with me, and he did say that the second enterotomy is what caused the second surgery. He never distinguished between a different etiology for the subsequent surgeries, nor would it make sense. What happened, what the facts showed was that Mr. Lloyd's abdomen was called a difficult abdomen because he'd had so many previous abdominal surgeries. Because of the complications resulting from the first surgery, resulting from the enterocutaneous fistula, that there was no hernia repair done at that time. A second surgery, the surgery on the 30th, was required to repair the enterocutaneous fistula, and the subsequent surgeries were required to repair the hernias. Dr. Rowland testified that he had recurring hernias, and the subsequent surgeries were necessary to repair the recurring hernia. There was no evidence that the subsequent surgeries were necessitated by the mesh. And in fact, Dr. Adams testified, ironically, I think, that the second surgery, the surgery on January 30th, was a godsend because it permitted Dr. Rosenberger to remove the mesh.
If I'm not mistaken, I think the judge struck that testimony.
I'm sorry?
I think the judge struck that testimony at the time, the godsend testimony.
I believe that may be. That may be. Regardless, there was no testimony that this synthetic mesh or that the placement of the foreign body caused the subsequent surgeries. In fact, Dr. Rowland, the treating physician, testified that the subsequent surgeries were necessary in order to put mesh in to repair the hernias. And then after the third or fourth surgery, the mesh was infected again and had to be removed. So it was a series of surgeries meant to repair what abdominal wall Mr. Lloyd had left, given his history of abdominal surgeries prior to January 26, 2009.
Mr. Nemerl, here's a concern I have with the argument. You talked about the clarifications that Dr. Adams made under cross-examination, correct?
Yes.
But our standard of review requires us to look at the facts in the light most favorable to the plaintiff.
Correct.
So if we took the facts that were testified to on direct by Dr. Adams and disregarded what he said on cross because we're to construe everything in favor of the plaintiff, doesn't that compel that we listen to and follow the plaintiff's request here?
I don't think that the standard for directed verdict requires you to disregard testimony elicited in cross. That's as much a part of plaintiff's case as testimony elicited in direct. The case law cited in my brief, I believe it's Ossinger or something to that effect from the 50s, says that in considering a motion for directed verdict, one considers all of the evidence. And that's consistent with the rule with the case law currently. Only reasonable inferences are given the plaintiff. If cross-examination had no role in a directed verdict, I would expect a case would say so.
Well,
I'm not aware of any.
I think that case that you cited from the 50s is problematic for me because I don't think that's the standard we apply these days.
I think that it's incorporated through the reasonable inference language of the subsequent cases, that plaintiffs are only entitled to reasonable inferences. I liken removing the cross-examination testimony to removing certain words one doesn't want.
But if the jury were to believe Dr. Adams' direct testimony and disbelieve his cross-examination testimony,
I think your questioning assumes that there's a clear conflict between the two. And in fact, when you parse his testimony, I believe if you parse his testimony, he testified that the mesh resulted in an infection, but that the subsequent surgeries were necessary because of the enterocutaneous fistula. And
Did he ever testify that the infection is what caused the second surgery and the subsequent surgeries?
He did testify that the infection caused by the enterocutaneous fistula caused the second surgery. And that testimony.
Did he ever testify that the mesh caused the fistula?
No. No, he was quite clear in testifying that the fistula was caused by the partial thickness injury. And
as to which he did not fault Dr. Rosenberger.
And not only did he not fault Dr. Rosenberger for that, he said that he himself had had similar instances occur. He said that can occur within the standard. So there is no...
The fistula can.
The partial thickness injury.
The partial thickness injury, okay.
And that resulted in the fistula.
Okay.
Then, unless... It doesn't square that cross-examination wouldn't be considered on directed verdict when there's such a thing as redirect. And if cross-examination was not considered on directed verdict, then redirect shouldn't be considered either. It all comes into the hopper. And the standard, I believe, is looking at that evidence in the light most favorable to the plaintiff is what determines whether a directed verdict is appropriate.
So is it your view that after hearing both direct, cross, redirect, no reasonable juror could have believed Dr. Adams' first statement that all of the additional surgeries were required because the synthetic mesh was placed in the presence of the wound?
That's correct. That taking that statement into the context provided by Dr. Adams' subsequent testimony, even on direct, Dr. Adams testified that the second surgery was necessitated by the partial thickness injury. So I think that is my position, that taken in context, no reasonable juror could find in favor of the plaintiffs, given the whole of Dr. Adams' testimony.
Thank you.
If the court has no further questions.
Hopefully, I have 2 minutes.
Unfortunately, you've got about a half a minute, Mr.
Okay. Clifford. Just quickly, and Judge Navarro, you really nailed it as to what was said about this, the onset of infection. And on page 32 of my brief, it gives the exact statement Dr. Adams said. He said the better words would be acute within the first week, chronic acute, which is the first 4 months, and chronically infected, which is the months and even years until bacteria grows. So that was what he said, contrary to what counsel said, that it takes months. In fact, it can happen within a week, but it's acute. The other thing I wanted to emphasize is that 4 times Dr. Adams testified that what happened with the mesh, that caused the infection to cause the whole problem, and that he said four times that caused all of his problems and complications. And those are all clearly set forth in the brief. Just finally, Dr. Rowland himself, the general surgeon who was called in to help correct his problems, Mr. Lloyd's problems, he didn't, but he testified specifically that he said...
Mr. Kofed, I've allowed you to go considerably beyond your time.
Okay, only Dr. Rowland also said he would never use synthetic mesh over an enterotomy, and that's specifically exactly in his testimony.
Thank you. Thank you both, counsel, for your argument this afternoon. This case will stand submitted. We'll get you a written opinion in due course.